This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, welcome to CarCast and Edmunds podcast. Getting ready for the Porsche Rennsport reunion. You know, we're here kind of, I'm in my warehouse recording the show. Alistair's already up there. He got up a little bit earlier than I did. I guess the idea was you wanted to get up for some of the press events, some of the unveilings. Are you going to be able to stay for the weekend, or what's the plan?
No, I'm doing the business bit, Matt. It's like a mullet. I'm doing the business bit and you're doing the pleasure. So I'm I actually head back Saturday morning. Because divorces are quite expensive, so I have to get back to look after the kids. But yeah, I'm up here today. So today's Thursday as we're recording this. I've spent the day there. There's an unveil tonight, which I've got to go back to Laguna Seca for. And then I've got a little bit more downtime tomorrow to have a proper look around it. And then I head back Saturday morning. But yeah, it's an extraordinary event. They're expecting 50,000 people here on Saturday. It's a complete sellout.
Yeah,
it's just this huge injection of Porsche. It's crazy.
It's a big event. It's been gone for a little while. Those of you guys that are familiar with Rennsport, or I guess the official name is Porsche Rennsport Reunion, although we all just call it Rennsport.
It began as a sort of PR thing, and then as they morphed, it happens every 4 years. So, and this is the 75th anniversary of Porsche, so it's a really big deal.
75th anniversary of Porsche, and I think 50th anniversary of 9/11. So they're celebrating a few things. Yeah,
I'm getting a bag at my hotel room door, but I'm gonna wait and hope it goes away. This is the joys of live podcasting.
Go see who it is.
No, I'm just gonna ignore it. Unless the hotel's on fire and I haven't noticed, I'm gonna ignore it.
If you can't go to Rennsport, and I know you're listening to this after it happened, but there is a live stream, and I imagine that live stream is going to be on YouTube or something on their website, and be able to go back and kind of check out what's going on, so you can kind of get a sneak peek into what's happening up there. And the website is PorscheRennsportReunion.com, and we'll start to kind of getting into what you can expect, but you should check out the website, see what's all happening up there.
There's even an app for it.
It's a little bit like Monterey, you know, the Rolex Historics at Monterey. It's a little bit like the Velocity Invitational that we were at last year, which is a fantastic event, which I think is moving to Sonoma this year. But Velocity was great, a well curated event. Porsche is going to have some tractor racing. Some vintage Porsche tractors are going to be there. And I've seen it in the past, the tractor racing. It is incredibly slow. So I think they just do the straightaway like a drag race, and that's really about it. I don't know if they're going to go much further than that.
Well, I heard, unfortunately, you're going to see this and I'm not, but I've been talking today about it. Apparently, there's a maximum speed of 15 miles an hour. And if you're not like a Porsche aficionado, Porsche began making tractors and they pop up and bring a trailer now and again. And so I saw them today. There's all these tractors lined up. There's one of them in the livery of the Pink Pig, you know, the famous Porsche.
Yeah. Yeah. That was there before.
And they've got, which has fantastically on its seat, it has six written across the seat. And they've also got like a whole bunch of like superstar drivers. So they've got Mark Webber, you know, Formula One Mark Webber. They've got Andy Green, who was the world's fastest man, still the guy with the land speed record for, I think it was 763 miles an hour. Worked with him in my previous life. He was there today. It was great to catch up with him. He's racing a tractor. So Porsche's just basically flown in anybody who was anybody in their history. Derek Bell, Mr. Le Mans, he was sort of knocking around my hotel reception last night. You know, Jackie Ickx was jumping out of a cab. So it's basically anybody who's anybody's here from Porsche's history. So it's an amazing event. And I think you have to be like a Porsche owner or a Porsche diehard just to kind of revel in the sort of joy of it all and the, you know, the sense of occasion.
Imagine being the fastest guy in the world going over 700 miles an hour. And your big event on Saturday is a 15 mile an hour tractor drag race. And you're like, you got to helmet up. You got to safety is the priority here. Like you really, you know, like strap in, it's going to be a doozy.
Well, do you know what he spent the last year doing? Because Andy, as well as being the world's fastest man, his background, he was a fighter pilot, fast jet pilot in the RAF, the British Air Force. And then it was because of his experience in fast jets as a wing commander, you know, top gun stuff, that he got into thrust SSC in 97, I think it was, and became the world's fastest man. And then I worked with him on a diesel land speed record, which JCB, the, you know, the digger manufacturer, they did in Bonneville. God, I don't know, 15 years ago or something.
Yeah.
And I went out to Bonneville with him, and then they said a land speed record is 400 and something miles an hour in a diesel engine vehicle. And, but I said to him, like, you know, what are you doing now as we retired from the Air Force? And so we spent the last year sailing around the world. Me and my wife, basically they bought a yacht, rented a yacht, whatever they did, and just around the world for a year, like at 4 knots. But I was like, that's quite a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
Just two of you on a yacht bobbing, you know.
Yeah, as long as
and now
like
he's in
other.
A tractor race, so the tractor's gonna feel fast.
That tractor is gonna feel fast. You're right. You got to really like whoever you're on your trip with if you're gonna be sailing quietly for a year. Basically, I'm sure there's plenty of stops, but you're really gonna have to enjoy that person quite a bit.
His wife also told me a great story. I know we're getting slightly off subject, but his wife told me a fantastic anecdote. He's a really humble guy. He's not your kind of charismatic racing driver talking about yourself the whole time. He's actually a very sort of humble guy. And his wife was saying they met on a blind date and they talked about cars a bit. And I think she had a 911 and stuff. So they had a shared passion. And she said, anyway, we've been dating for like 4 or 5 months. And then he said, oh, you should watch this DVD. And they watched the DVD and she's like, oh, this is a land speed record. This is interesting. Is this a passion of yours? And then it was only then that she realized like he was the guy driving.
Yeah.
And there's, and it was unbelievable footage of him applying opposite lock at something like 500 or 600 miles an hour. He's got like full half a turn of opposite lock on at 600 miles an hour, because apparently the jet engines couldn't quite, you can't make jet engines equalize. So the car's always slightly pulling in one direction. So, crazy, crazy story. But he's racing a Porsche tractor this weekend.
At least when she watches the documentary, she doesn't have to worry about the result, because he's sitting there going, hey, you should watch the documentary about me making, you know, breaking a land speed record, because he obviously walked away. It's not a very tragic thing where he walks out the door and he's like, I'm never coming back. What did you drive to Monterey? I assume you drove, you didn't fly.
I'm lucky enough to have an old classic 911 and 993, the last of the air cooled. So I don't get to drive it as much as I'd like. So I drove up in that, and I'll be driving back Saturday morning, which is cool. I was expecting to like drive up in a massive convoy of Porsches, and I came up Wednesday afternoon, which is probably more the business end of things. So there wasn't actually that much on the road, but I think Friday, Saturday, if you're in the kind of Monterey Bay area, it's just going to be a kind of crazy sea of Porsches. And it's a bit like Car Week or Good in the UK, where the car parks are as interesting as the actual event.
Yeah, right. You drove up by yourself?
I drove up by myself, yeah.
How?
I don't have friends.
How was the drive? I mean, it's like when the 993 came out, I was like, it's a cool car. Everybody wanted that car in the turbo versions. And then now here we are a couple decades later. Is it a comfortable car to drive 300 miles?
Yeah, it's awesome. I actually bought one in the UK, I don't know, like 15, 20 years ago now. So I bought this thing, yeah, probably about 15 years ago. And I bought a 993. I kind of like, it's one of the rare moments in life where I probably got this right. So I think I paid about 25,000, maybe pounds at the time. So about like nearly $30,000, still a lot of money, but not like it is today.
Not
and
like
then
it
when
is
I
today.
moved to the when I moved to the US, I had to sell my beloved car, which was a silver 993 with a black interior, and then basically took the money, and then of course mentally managed to convince myself that this wasn't real money because it was actually 25,000, even though it had now appreciated. And so I then was looking to buy something else, and I thought about an NSX or maybe like an old Targa or something. And then there was a silver 993 for sale in Venice Beach, and I went and drove it, and I thought, this is just such a nice thing. So I basically owned the same car for the last 15 years.
So you
but this year I spent a bit of money.
You
so
did.
I did the suspension. I put Bilstein V8 suspension, if people know their stuff. You know, geeky, yeah. Here, I put a slightly naughty Fista Stage 2 exhaust on it. And I also added, and maybe this is a good link into something I've been doing today, but I actually added, Porsche developed a single dinner, like an old-fashioned radio that looks old-fashioned, but is actually Apple CarPlay. I treated myself to that so that I could drive up and make calls and listen to Spotify and all the stuff that we do. So you put all this together, and actually you've got a very comfortable car that I rely on. And, you know, can make calls. I can do business. Like, I've got air conditioning. I've got airbags. But it still feels and sounds like a classic 911 with an air-cooled engine.
Is it quiet enough inside with the exhaust that you can still make a call?
Yeah, you get more road noise than you might imagine. I mean, you get still, actually, on modern 911s, depending on what tires you're on, you still get quite a lot of road noise, but it's noisier inside. But yeah, you can make phone calls and you listen to music. The exhaust, actually, one of the tricks with this is because there's so much, the great noise is also through the intake. You don't want to go too big on the exhaust because then it overpowers it. So it's noisier outside than it is in, but it just, by the time Porsche got to 993s, everything started to get a little bit more sophisticated. And my car was almost like an executive spec from 97. So things were starting to go more in the sort of GT direction. So what the exhaust does and the suspension is take it a little bit further back to maybe what those air-cooled cars sounded like in the 80s. And for me, this is a passion. It's a passion project. So it's a bit of fun, but it's a privilege to own. And, you know, it's nice to turn up at this thing, in style.
Yeah, I'm driving a Volvo S90 Recharge, so I'm going to be the only one there not in a Porsche. I'm going to be up there in a Volvo, nice, lovely sedan.
But they do have like the best seats.
It's really the best comfortable. Seats. They just dropped it off today, and I'm going to drive it up. And I just kind of wanted to find a comfortable road trip car. And after our conversation a couple of weeks ago, I wanted to make sure it wasn't an EV and I wanted to actually get to Rensport on time. And we've got the Porsche's Adam Carolla's 935 up there. It was invited to be on display as part of Rensport. So they, we had some calls from Porsche in Atlanta, and they took good care of it, and they scooped up the car and they brought it up there, and they sent me a couple of quick pictures I just put up on social media so you can kind of see what the display is going to look like. They have it roped off for now, but obviously it won't be once the event opens as it did today. But yeah, hopefully people will get to see that car too.
Yeah,
you were going to say, cool, I was talking about the Volvo, but.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the Volvo has the best seat. So you will be traveling in.
It's a lovely car. I can't wait to get more time in it. And we've driven a few, but kind of excited about it. It's a good, it's a great color. And it's good size, good size sedan for that.
Yeah.
Okay. So you got to Rensport. You did a quick lap around it. You've got, looks like somebody's
housekeeping coming to get into my room. I'm okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Let's carry on.
So if you guys haven't figured out, as we're recording this, is Alistair's up there in a hotel room and someone keeps banging on his door for some reason. I'm not quite sure why.
I don't exactly. I forgot to put the do not disturb, but it is +4 in the afternoon, so I perhaps wasn't anticipating housekeeping. Anyway, should we move on? I did today get the privilege going out in a GT3 RS around Laguna Seca. Porsche did a bit of a sort of demo thing at lunchtime of some of their their road cars with actually one of their instructors who I know well, Johnny from the Porsche Experience Center in LA. I wasn't driving. He was driving, but he knows Laguna Seca a hell of a lot better than I do. And it was just great fun. I mean, it is crazy, like, how good, you know, I mean, obviously the RS is built for, you know, people doing track days and everything else. With a pro driver behind the wheel around a circuit like Laguna Seca, you realize just how good, you know, how good these things are. They're extraordinary, how, you know, the capability of, you know, any of the sort of GT cars.
It's actually an interesting point to bring up because we've gone up to Laguna Seca so many times for Monterey Car Week. It's almost exclusively up to like a year or two ago, vintage cars. So you're watching a lot of pretty fast lap times, anything from sports cars to vintage F1 cars. But then you start to realize, you know, once you get a fully sorted, proper, modern car like the GT3 RS out there, and like what an incredible beast of a car that is. And I haven't got much lap time, track time at all at Laguna Seca, but going to that event for, you know, basically a decade, almost a decade and a half now, and just seeing the vintage cars go out there and just, you know, these guys sawing at the wheel and just, you know, the skinny tires and kind of sliding all over. And then, yeah, now they're starting to do a few like exhibition things, and at Velocity, they had some of the crazy supercars out there, McLarens and stuff. And Gunther Works 911 was out there. Billy Johnson was driving it, kind of sliding it around turn two, turn three. And you realize you're going, oh, I bet that's fun as hell. Just like getting a nice modern car out there. Got the windows up, got the air on. And even if you're not the one driving, just getting a ride shotgun with a proper driver is gonna be pretty nuts.
Yeah, it was very cool. It was real, just the noise as well. The noise of the GT3 RS it's quite a tool.
I drove the GT3, but not the RS, at the Speed Vegas. We went out there, and Adam Carolla and I went out there, and they offered up a couple of different cars for us. And I grabbed the GT3, and then I grabbed, I think it was the Ferrari, I don't know if it was the 430 or the 458, now that I'm thinking about it. Probably 458. I think it was a 458, and did a handful of laps in both of those cars. But Adam grabbed the Ferrari as well, but I specifically wanted him to grab a modern day muscle car because he kind of shies away from those, right? And I told him, I was just like, grab the Shelby GT500. It's been breathed on a little bit by the guys at Shelby American because they basically live right next door. So they changed the horsepower. They changed the horsepower from like 760 about 800, but it really was all about the transmission tuning in that car. And I think he enjoyed that. I think he had a great time kind of getting behind the wheel and realizing what big V8 supercharged power would be compared to the cars that he's normally driven on the track. But honestly, I felt like the GT3 was a little bit easier car to drive on that track. When I was in the Ferrari, and again, I've never driven the car, either one of those cars. I just got in and just started getting it. And I was with an instructor. They were riding shotgun, just sort of coaching you and doing it. I thought I had less control in the Ferrari than I did in the Porsche. It felt more controlled to me. But when we went back in, I was still faster in the Ferrari than I was in the GT3. And although I got the GT3 first, so maybe in the Ferrari, it's like, now I know where I'm going. And so I had a little bit more confidence in knowing where I was pointing the car. But it just seemed a little bit, the Porsche seemed easier to drive than me.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? They did an amazing job of, I mean, they know their customers, but they've done an amazing job of overcoming some of the physics of an engine car, but also just making this thing accessible. But at the same time, you know, you can play with all the setup and everything else. And so It's that old thing, isn't it, about, like, you know, rewarding the novice, but flattering the novice, but also rewarding the expert. And they are just brilliant at it. And it was cool wandering around the paddock. If you go just, you know, I don't know how many cars are there, 1,000 or something. There's 959s. Everywhere you look, there's some kind of cool classic Porsche.
Right.
Like, I remember I shared on my Instagram, we were on cars earlier, like a picture. There's a guy there with a Golf 917. And yes. next to it, his road car, which is a Singer Porsche. And I was like, that is the cool, that's your two-car garage right there. Your 917 race car in Golf colors. So, like, absolute perfection with your Singer Porsche sat next to it to take you to the circuit. So
yeah, an early Singer. That was, you know, very cool. Not the crazy wide body 934 and a half type Singer, like early Singer, skinny fender. Singer.
Yeah, the ones that they're not going to make them anymore, and I think they're going to be the super collectible ones. They're beautiful things.
It's funny, I had the conversation with Jensen Button about that. He was driving his Singer. He has a Singer. He was driving his Singer to Monterey to Car Week. And we happened to pass by. I mean, we smoked him. We were in the Toyota Sienna minivan. We blew by him like he was standing still, but, you know, whatever. I get it. He didn't want to challenge us.
It's talent at the end of the day, Matt, isn't it, really?
I mean, there's an F1 driver and a Singer versus me in a minivan. I mean, why would he even try, right? Because he's going to get smoked. But I don't know. We were just kind of talking, and I don't think he was trying to, like, poo-poo on the idea or anything, but it was just like, he's like, I just like my Singer. And he goes, the new one just seems too big. And I go, I get it, though, but that's what they were trying to do. They're trying to, like, end the production on the current version of what they've been doing, make it more exclusive, have those values continue to go up, create value for the brand as well, and then move on to something else, to the turbo cars. For his money, he's sticking with what he's got. He feels like the new Singers are a little too big.
I don't think it's just his only car either, but
yeah, it's probably not his only car.
But the other thing about the Singer is, you know, they've gone from being what, $400,000 or $500,000, and, you know, looking like reasonable value at that level, and now suddenly they're in the game of $2-3 million. And it's interesting. I spent an hour this morning with, I've probably pronounced this wrong, but the Sonderwunsch, Porsche. See the head of Sonderwunsch for Porsche, and there's a pavilion here at the circuit which is all about basically Porsche setting up a bespoke service, and they've only been going a couple of years in this guise, and Porsche always sort of dabbled in, you know, like trim this and trim that, and anybody who goes on the configurator knows there's like 1,000 different options.
Yeah,
I think there's literally 1,000 options. But this is beyond that. So you've got like Porsche normal, Porsche exclusive, which is like fancy leather, and then you've got these guys which are on top of that,
almost like a coachwork.
Yeah, and so you can now go to them, so if you want, and they showed us, for example, a GT3 Touring, and if you want your GT3 Touring badge, say in body color or some unique color, that doesn't come through exclusive, that comes through Sonderwunsch, and which really means, I think it's like heart's desire or something like that, to translate into a special desire if you translate it into English. And now they're actually building bespoke commissions, rather like Ferrari does. And it was a little bit like, you know, Singer's doing this, you know, Gunter Works and Roof and everybody else is doing this. Like, why can't we? We're like, you know, we're the mothership.
Right.
And so it was explaining that you can go in now. They've got 9 projects on the go. 9 kind of unique things. And if you go in and basically hand over $100,000, you will spend the next year designing your Porsche. So you say, here's $100,000. And now here is an engineer and a designer. And we will together will conceive of your car. And then on the assumption that we're all happy at the end of the year, then we will build this thing.
For a lot more money.
And probably, like, you know, he was saying that you started about $1.5 million.
Right.
And so up you go from there.
The $100,000 is just a chit chat with the designers and engineers for a year and plan it out. And then you get to go spend $1 million getting it built.
$1.5 million.
Yeah, $1.5 million. Although I don't know what what the financials break down when you do that with Ferrari. But when you sit down with Ferrari and go, hey, take a 458 or a super fast, and now we're going to completely turn this into a single person roadster with no top. Right. And, with sort of with a canopy behind you or whatever, like, you know, then they go, okay, yeah, that's probably a similar program. You're sitting down for $1.5 million. You sit down with them and go, let's take your $400,000 car. And let's see how we turn it into a $2 million bespoke car, whether it's done in aluminum or carbon fiber or whatever. But yeah.
So he gave me an example of like how quickly this could escalate. It's like, let's say you go in and want a Panamera, you know, the four-door family car. If you want a Panamera road, if you want a Panamera soft top, which obviously Porsche doesn't make, it was like, if you just want it with like a hood that you have to manually fold up, then, you know, we can do it. If you want it with like a electric hood mechanism, we have to engineer all that bespoke. That's probably about 800 grand.
Yeah.
In the hood right. mechanism.
Although. Yeah, go ahead.
And if you want it to match your, you know, your handbag or your denim or whatever it would be, it's about 45 grand for unique color. But if you want like fancy paint, you know, like chroma, whatever the hell it's called, then that goes up again. And you see what a lot of people are doing, apparently, what's proving popular is if you buy something like a Carrera GT and, you know, somebody else has had a crack at it, but now it's your car, you ship it back to Germany, back to Zuffenhausen, and then they will kind of like start again. And you can say, well, actually, I want, you know, blue leather, not gray leather, and they'll start to kind of almost like rebuild the car into your specification if you're the second or third owner or whatever it may be. It's right. Fascinating and, conversation.
And now it becomes interesting because let's say you spend $1 million on something like a Carrera GT and you do want to personalize it and make it your own, but you want to create value with the car, you kind of have to go back to the factory and do that, right? You kind of want to go back to them and go, oh, you have to do it, because if I just go to a hot rod shop and custom leather, then you know, anybody can do that, and it's just not really the value. Now you've ruined a Carrera GT as opposed to going back to Porsche and having them add to it. You know?
Yeah, and I guess it's similar to what you got to with Boxsters and 996s and some of the other cars when they got down to a lower price point, because then actually they almost became disposable. I remember Boxsters being, you know, $10,000 or something, at which point if the gearbox goes, then it's throw away the Boxster.
Yeah. You know, you brought Panamera though, but Panamera four-door, and this has come up a bunch of times when Panamera came out. They're like, oh, V8 front engine, twin turbo, you know, it's like long nose GT style, but they're not going to do a two-door. They're not going to bring back a 928. But now that they've got this fully sort of Coachworks division of Porsche, and I know people are going for the high dollar cars, but yeah, Panamera, go to them and go, now let's turn this into a two-door. Let's turn this into a proper 928 sort of modern-day continuation. Right?
That would be very cool.
It could be a pretty interesting car.
And we did get into the conversation of like, what wouldn't you do?
Yeah.
And he said, you know, like they try and guide people, and he gave us an example, like somebody came to them and wanted all four wheels painted in a different color, and they were a bit like, you know, you sure about this? And if a customer said, so they painted all four wheels in a different color, I have no idea what it looks like, but he said the thing that they won't do is take motifs from other brands. So you can't like put Ferrari Testarossa side strakes on a 911 or something like that. It has to feel, you know, authentic to the brand. But he said actually most of the time, you know, if you're gonna, these people are massive Porsche fans who've probably got a massive collection, so they're not coming in with crazy asks. But It's cool. I mean, it's the money again. It's like the money involved is extraordinary. But
I want to say, if you've got it, some point during the Apple Computer 935 that Bobby Rahal raced, it was the Newman car, and then Rahal raced. At some point, it had the different color wheels. So the idea of going, hey, I want different color wheels on the car, could be sort of an homage to the Apple car. I want to say it had.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I don't remember where in its life, because Bobby Rahal took the car and he raced it at Daytona, and I think it was at Le Mans and a bunch of other races. And at some point, it had different color. It ran at the different color wheels. And oddly enough, the guy who would know is a non-Porsche guy. It is Dave Merrick, the head of design for Honda and Acura. Because I think Dave crewed on that car when Bobby Rahal was racing it. A young Dave Merrick was somehow involved with that car. So he's very knowledgeable about the history of that car, and being a designer, he's create posters and stuff about, you know, about that car and stuff. So he's got a lot of information about it, but I'm pretty sure that car had the different color wheels in its history. So somebody going, hey, I want to do a 911 and I'm going to do the different color wheels, could be a play on the Apple car is what I'm saying. Could be kind of interesting.
The other cool thing that I'm going to go and check out tomorrow, Matt, you should come and look at this, is a guy who looks after my car, looks after Beverly Hills classic car collection, VNS Motors. And he's developed, they have this competition where you can use bits from their parts. So basically you can take parts from their history and attach them to a restoration. So it's kind of like a restomod competition, but it's only using Porsche parts. And Porsche apparently has like 80,000 parts. So he's built this car, which has, I'm going to go and see him tomorrow, but he built a car which is basically a fusion of 964 and 993. But it's the original. I love sleeper cars. You know, I absolutely love sleeper cars. So it looks like it's original paint. So it looks like a slightly tired 964 with some paint chips and everything else till you get inside it. And then it's all been redone. It's got a little wooden steering, a little wooden gear stick from a 917. It's got an engine from an RS. I'm probably getting this wrong, but it's just basically what they've done is plunder the very best parts from a 964, a 993, the RS models and everything else, and then create this car. And there's a big competition going on. There's a few more of them out there tomorrow. And
yeah, I don't know
if it's really cool.
Is it just a competition between dealers and stuff? Because I know out here, the guys over at Galpin, at Porsche Santa Clarita, one of the Galpin dealers, they've opened their dealer for a few years now, and they've been participating in this annual competition to kind of restore and reimagine a Porsche, if you will. Although I feel like reimagine is not the right term, because that's kind of a fair term for Singer. And although everybody's stealing that term, and this past year they did a slant nose, they bought like kind of a wrecked factory slant nose car, and they brought it back to life. And that's
exactly it. It's funny you would say about the reimagined. I remember a time when Singer first came along, and they were running a bit fast and loose with like the Porsche branding, and nobody was quite sure who these kind of crazy guys in California, you know, were. And we used to get, like, if you borrowed a car, you used to get like the press person would say, you cannot call it, like, don't call it like a Singer 911. It had to be, there's like a form of words, it has to be like Porsche 911 reimagined by Singer or something, because they're always paranoid about getting sued. And it's like, well, you know, like, okay, we'll play the game a bit, but everybody got very nervous about everybody running around saying it's the Singer 911, because they were worried about Porsche getting legal about it. But these days, I think everybody's friends and it's cool.
Yes, they're friends now. I think they saw the value in it, but there was, and I don't know the full story, but there was the conversation between Porsche and Singer about how they're going to, you know, what's going to happen here. Are they going to call them 911s? Are they going to call them Porsches? Are they going to call Singer 911s? What are they going to call them? And I don't know if it started off as a lawsuit and just sort of ended in a handshake deal, and now everybody's playing nice. But what I guess the little things that kind of bug me is Singer did it. They did it well. They call it reimagined. It's working. And now there's 15 other companies that are taking other brands and they're reimagining all of these other things. And I was like, nah, I don't think you get to do that. That's not fair to do. Like, you gotta, I get it. Like, you know, people are just knocking off essentially, or taking their cues from what Singer did because they did it so successfully. But it's not as original, right? Because everyone wants to be the Singer of something now. I want to be the Singer of Land Rovers, or the Singer of Mini Coopers, or the Singer of the Z car, right? And I was like, that's great for Singer because they're getting all this, these wonderful accolades, but we need to stop. We probably need to stop doing that, calling it the Singer of XYZ, right?
And also, Singer in itself was only really doing what Roof had done and others before them.
Right.
Took it in a slightly different direction, in more of a kind of personalized style statement, more of a bespoke suit than something like a Roof, which was all about, you know, hardcore performance and everything else. So,
which is a vehicle that I love, by the way.
Me too. Like the Yellow Bird or something. That's so cool.
It's such a cool piece. And yes, Roof, it looks so much like a modern day 911 when really there's nothing Porsche on it. I don't think there's any carryover parts at all. Everything is from scratch, from the gauges to the lug nuts. Like, everything is fresh on that car.
It reminds me of Ford's rally car. You remember when I once went out to Sardinia with Ford and their WRC car when McRae was rallying, and they had this Ford Focus, which looked like a Ford Focus. I said, so like, what on that is a Ford Focus? Like the door handle.
Yeah.
Like literally handle. That was it. The door handle. Like, what about the lights or the hood or this?
Yeah.
Nope. The door handle.
Yeah. I'm surprised even that made it. Often, you know, because so many homologated cars are like, oh no, just from the firewall to the B pillar, right? You know, like there's a little bit there. There's the firewall and there's the windshield, you know, and then the rest is new. But that's not with Roof. Not, I don't think they use anything at all. But yeah, kind of interesting. So, and we'll keep this week a little bit short. We'll bring all the details to you next week. But kind of walking around, what else are you seeing? I know Porsche has got some plans to maybe debut a few things here in the U.S. If you were at Goodwood, they had Mission X, which is a crazy kind of electric supercar. I heard about Porsche 357 Speedster concept. I don't know if you got a chance to see any of these things yet. And then Hot Wheels, I think Pat Long and Hot Wheels debuted their 944 Safari wagon, kind of a cool piece. They got the real car and the toy that they debuted. But anyway, just kind of walking around Laguna Seca. Is there anything else cool you've got to see so far?
I saw the Mission car, and I'm actually heading back there in about an hour's time. There's an unveil tonight of a new Porsche, which we can talk about next week. And I think tomorrow I'm going to have to take a little bit more time out to wander around and see everything. But it's beautifully done. And, you know, just the sort of theater in it. They've got some really cool stuff. They've got this little wall. It's like a big sort of, I don't know, like paper wall with all these like little silhouettes of cars where people can go and like color them in. It's like a massive kids coloring book on a wall.
Yeah.
Which is really fun. But the queue for the merchandise, everybody loves a bit of merch. And I said to the kids, I'll come back with like some t-shirts or something. Like, you know, like the queue for the merchandising shop today was like 2 hours long. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
It was like hour and a half, 2 hours. There was a massive snack. It's like, what the hell is that? Is that like some sort of signing? Is that like the, you know, is that Mission? You know, it's like, what's going on? Nope. It's the merchandising stall. And apparently it's a bit like those outlet malls where, you know, you can only go and buy two pieces of Prada. It's having to ration the merchandise. It's crazy, isn't it? It's like, everybody wants to go and spend a fortune on a t-shirt because you can only buy it here.
Yeah, because you can only buy it
there. I don't know. There's something about the human psychology of it all that's a bit messed up.
And the wait in that kind of line for a $47 t-shirt.
But also like the psychology of it, because I was like, I need to go and buy the kids. And I looked at this huge line and I was like, ah, must be good.
Well, don't worry about it though, because your kids don't like Porsches. They like trucks.
Yeah, they like trash trucks.
Yeah, they like trash trucks. They like F-150s. They like Raptors. Mm-hmm.
Oh, following on from last week's show, one little aside, I drove up here on the same route. You know, like I did a story on the problems of charging an EV, where we really talked about a couple of shows ago. Anyway, I went past the charging station and I said, you know what, I'm going to pop in and see whether they've fixed it. So I turned up and there's a guy from Electrify America there charging it. So Electrify America actually came to us and said, look, you know, like we want to put this right. And there was a guy there literally fixing it as I turned up. And he said, I think that one, there was four of 350 chargers. Remember the original story then, none of them were working. And he said, I think the middle one should work. And then he was trying to fix the other. So I'm going to go back on Saturday morning when I drive back and see whether they've been fixed.
So you're going to drive your 911 over to the electric charger just to see if it works so you can come back and tell us if it works.
I can get back in my 25-year-old car, 26-year-old car.
It would be hilarious if you saw him there and working on it and going, hey, I got to fix this thing because some clown on a podcast kept bitching about how this thing doesn't work and I got yelled at for it and now I got to fix it. And then be like, I can't imagine hearing something like that. That would be terrible.
I just flew in for a quick vacation. I have no idea.
That's right. All right. So why don't we do this? I think we're going to kind of cut things a little bit shorter on this particular episode because I'm going to get wheels up and start heading in that direction. I think I'll see you there a bit tomorrow, maybe tomorrow afternoon as we're here recording this. We'll catch up a little bit there. And then next week, we'll kind of recap this and see what else is going on.
Sounds good. I'm going to have a shower and then head back out.
Yeah, have a good time, and we'll get into it more next week. Thanks, guys. As always, Edmunds.com is the website. ShiftAndSteer.com is the website. And until next time, keep the air and the spare in the bag and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.